now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B. Dan and Image, grade A. My name is Jason Giaconetti. I'm joined by that Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jason. Today, again, we're going back into history for what a lot of people feel is the one film that many identify with starting the genre, the 50-year-old Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And we'll get to it right after this.
What happened was true. The most bizarre and brutal series of crimes in America.
Is the movie that is just as real, just as close.
Crazy! You gotta make it stop!
Just as terrifying as being there. Even if one of them survives, what will be left? The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. After you stop screaming, you'll start talking about it.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was released October 11, 1974, with an 83-minute running time. Your director is the one and only Toby Hooper. Of course, Toby Hooper would go on to direct a number of other things, and including but not limited to working with Steven Spielberg and, you know, like the whole idea behind Poltergeist and things like that. So Kim Henkel and Toby Hooper are your writers. Your producer is Toby Hooper. Your stars here are no one you ever heard of except Marilyn Burns. She's pretty much it. And Gunnar Hansen, of course, became famous because he is Leatherface.
Right.
But Gunnar Hansen wasn't a star before this. None of these people were stars before this. Marilyn Burns has become more of a kind of horror icon since then because of, like, this movie being so famous. The same thing with Gunnar Hansen. Paul Partisan, Edwin Neal, Jim Sidow. What most people remember about this is that John Larroquette does the opening monologue, which is the biggest name in the whole movie.
But he was in 74.
He wasn't even a star or anything. Right. He just was a guy who could really read well. Music by Toby Hooper and Wayne Bell. Your production company is Vortex Inc., distributed by Bryanston Distributing Company. And then your budget is anywhere between $80 to $140 million, with a box office of just about $31 million. I read that wrong. $80,000 to $140,000 with a return on it of almost $31 million. I read that backwards. So you figure $140,000 is about $800,000 now, still under $1 million. But so this is one of the most successful independently made movies of all time, just like Halloween, just like never the other ones. Anyway, so the $30 million they say that would estimate to about $150 million nowadays, if you kind of were just guesstimating that out. To say that this movie is one of the most influential movies, maybe of the last 50 years, would be an understatement, because Texas Chainsaw Massacre, even people who have never seen this movie, and I mean never have ever seen it at all, know what Texas Chainsaw Massacre is. Why? Because people know that Texas is a place. They know that a chainsaw can cut you, and the word massacre tells you it's not good. So John alone tells you that you're going to have a situation that's probably not very good for you. But to say something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre still has video games being made. It's still a horror franchise. It's been rebooted. It's been booted sideways. It's been, you know, revamped, redone, you name it. Leatherface, who is not nearly as popular as a Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Pinhead, you know, kind of thing, is still a horror icon. People still know what it looks like. You'll have people literally take, you know, I'm not kidding, take a piece of ham, just put it on their face. Like, look at me. You know, like, I mean, it's like, you know, some people might say, that's like Silence of the Lambs. Like, okay, why do you think Hannibal Lecter wears the guy's face? I'm not saying anything, but it's what it is. And of course, this movie is quote unquote based on real events, in that Texas is a place and chainsaws are a thing, and Ed Gein was a person who killed people and was not a very nice person and did the horrible, despicable things. It is loosely, and I say that word, yeah, meaning loosely based on Ed Gein.
You have to take every time you see that pre-opening thing that says based on true events or a true story. I mean, unless it's an actual true story that you know about, you just take it with a grain of salt.
So it's like Summer of Sam, based on real events. It was based on the Son of Sam killer. It's not accurate, but it's based on it,
yeah,
right? But that's very different. There was never this never happened. There's never been a family that's been, you know, with a chainsaw, cutting people up, making chili, doing all that stuff. That none of that stuff happened, right? But that's the whole thing. Like, but that's what people are like, well, this is real. Like, it's real in that it's based on an actual serial killer who did horrible, despicable, disgusting things, but he didn't do these things.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. All right. So, as I said, this opens with a narrative being read by John Larroquette, which is outstanding. I mean, that literally that's one of my favorite parts of this movie. But this movie has a few things in it that I'll just mention them now. The sound of a camera taking a picture, and then I could hear the whine of the film winding. Right. That has been stolen used. I used air quotes to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
A million times since then. Like every time you want to be like something hard hitting, that sound, you hear it. Now you're thinking like, I've heard that sound in like a Saw movie, or I've heard that sound in like whatever, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you have. You've heard it also in Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies too, because they reuse it over and over, but it's at least their property. It is really effective. Why? Because it gives you a very unnerving sense of what's happening.
There's going to be a record on film somewhere of what's going on.
Right. Yeah. That things are being recorded. Rob Zombie loves this kind of stuff. I mean, if you don't know that Rob Zombie enjoys these kind of movies, and I don't know where you've been for the last, you know, 2 decades, because literally all his movies are, he's trying to remake Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, everyone, like the Devil's Rejects is like the buddy cop version House of Thousand Corpses, which we reviewed last year, yeah, is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's Texas Chainsaw. It's this movie again. And in literally almost some scenes shot for shot, but at the same time being different, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And literally doing all the things that Tobe Hooper could not afford to do. And what's happening? All right. So in the early hours of August 18th, 1973, a grave robber steals several remains from a cemetery near New Muerto, County, Texas. The robber ties a rotting corpse and other body parts onto a monument, creating a grisly display, which is discovered by a local residents as the sun rises, which I'm going to tell you right now probably smelled gross. Everything in this. So if you think something smells really bad in this movie, I'm going to tell you a secret. It did. Some of the stuff was real. They went to slaughterhouses, got real bones, real blood, real what, anything that was used, real stuff like that is real. And the very end of this movie probably is one of the most disgusting smells they said ever on any set ever, as everything was rotted completely because it had been there for days. Anyway, back to the story at hand. Driving in a van are five young people taking a road trip through the area. Sally, Jerry, Pam, Kirk, and Sally's handicapped brother, Franklin, who, I'm going to say this right now, and I don't mean to be mean, but no one likes Franklin. No one in the movie likes Franklin. No one who's ever seen this movie likes Franklin. If you identify with Franklin, please write in and tell me how you identify with this guy, because no one likes him. And I don't mean that to be negative. I understand that he's in a wheelchair and stuff like that, but his character is literally designed for you to hate him. Yeah. You just cannot wait for him to die.
Yeah, the only one that, I mean, his sister obviously loves him. And she's the reason why he's on this road trip with them.
No, I understand. But I'm saying, but like the character, I don't mean person. No, the person's probably not nothing wrong with him. But as a character of Franklin,
yeah.
You're like, no. Like, just kill him. Like, you are just hoping that literally pull the knife out. Oh, no, he's dead. Oh, our movie can go on. Because you just don't, you literally don't feel bad for him. You don't care. It's horrible to feel that way. I know you're thinking I'm a heartless person, and that might be true, but like, I'm just sorry, but no one likes them. Anyway, they stop at the cemetery to check out the graves of Sally and Franklin's grandfather, who appears undisturbed. As the group drives past the slaughterhouse, which has got to smell wonderful, Franklin recounts that the Hardesties, that's their family's history, with animal slaughter. They pick up a hitchhiker.
Which is never a good idea.
It's never a good idea to pick up any hitchhiker. Okay, so I'm going to stop right here, friend. So you're saying, Jay, there are some old school pornos that start with you picking up a hitchhiker. That's a blonde, good looking woman. Right. This guy, good God.
I mean, until you get later on in the film, he's the most disgusting thing you see.
Yeah, no, things get grosser than him, but why would you pick him up? Like, first of all, it looks like he's bleeding.
Yeah, you got five people in the van.
Yeah, the van's not roomy.
And including the van, has got
a wheelchair and all their stuff. I'm just saying this.
And he doesn't have a seat when he gets in there. He's not sitting on the floor.
Yeah, well, most of them don't have seats. The whole back of the van's open, you know, for doing other things. Anyway, where are we? Okay, so they pick up the hitchhiker because bad ideas, who says that his own family also has experience with animal slaughter. When the group refuses to pay the hitchhiker for a photo, he attacks Franklin and smears a blood symbol on the side of the van as he's ejected. Okay, that's probably a nice way of saying that. So they have to know this is a bad idea. And you're just like, part of you just is like, man, you know, they get what they deserve. You know, there's a saying about, you know, Gen X, F around and find out. Yep. That's what your business is asking. Like, let's find out what happens here. Because this is not a good idea. And he does, Franklin's playing with the knife and he's like, I got a good knife too. You're like, man, of course he's got a good knife. I'm surprised he doesn't have all kinds of knives. But, it is just, and then he takes the photograph and he's like, it's a good photo and he wants to be paid for it and he cuts him. Anyway, so when the group refuses, okay, I've got that. Low on gas, the van stops at the station where the proprietor says that he has no fuel available. The group explores a nearby abandoned house owned by the Sally and Franklin's family. Okay, so that's where we meet the other, we don't know at the time, we meet the other members of the family, the Hewitt family, right? We don't know they're the Hewitt family, we don't need this stuff yet. But he's running the little kind of like, he's got barbecue going on and he's got a gas station with no gas. Yes. And it is hard for people who have, I don't know how to explain this. It is hard to understand that that was kind of probably pretty real. Like that's a kind of like, that's how gas station, like, especially in 1974, we're not talking like 1984, 1994, we're talking 74. So 50 years ago, there were times we didn't have no gas. Sure. Gas doesn't come to this time. It didn't, whatever. I mean, people ate what they found.
Well, it was a two-lane road, so it wasn't an interstate.
If it is even a two-lane road, even at that point.
But no, but where they come in, it's a two-lane road where they're driving. Now, the thing is, it looks like the road trip was to actually go to
the old
family's house.
Well, they think they're going on the road trip, and they're going to stop at the house. Right. It's never 100% clear what they're really doing.
Yeah.
Like, If it's up to me, I'm saying, like, I feel like they're going to go buy drugs or do whatever kind of thing. That's what it feels like they're going to go do and try to ditch Franklin so they could all hook up. But it just seems like the house wasn't the end goal.
No.
You know, it was just a stop along the way.
That's why, yeah. That's why, because they were hoping to get gas to continue on.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't have to go that far to go to the house.
Right. So Kirk and Pam leave the others behind, planning to go swimming. They discover another nearby house running a gas-powered generator, hoping to barter for gas. Kirk enters the house. And here's where the business picks up. A large man wearing a mask made of human skin attacks Kirk with a hammer, killing him. Now, let's stop for a second. Oh my God, the blood and gore in this movie. Wait a minute. There is no blood. And there's no gore in this movie. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I take that back. There is blood and gore in this movie. It's all realistic, and it all happens at the end when they run into things by accident. It is unintentional blood and gore, but it's all real. It's actual blood happening. Toby Hooper had, what was that? Oh, right. No money. He had no money to pay for anything. So they went and got animal scraps and bones from the, like, they went and bought garbage, basically, to use. They didn't have money to do anything. He didn't have money for special effects. They didn't have money. They got the chainsaws, used them, and returned them to Sears. Like, so I'm not kidding. Toby Hooper has said he got the inspiration for part of his inspiration for Chainsaw Massacre. He was in Sears, and he was looking at chainsaws. And there was all these people got around him. And all he thought was, how great would it be if I fired one of these chainsaws and just cut everyone apart? And you're thinking to yourself going, that's pretty dark. And then you think to yourself going, huh, but I bet it's 100% accurate. Because that's probably where the idea came from. And I'm not kidding. That has been rumored. Again, nothing, that they used the chainsaws, made sure they didn't damage them, and brought them back because they couldn't afford to even rent chainsaws. That's how little they had for this. It's Leatherface. We don't know it's Leatherface, but it's Leatherface. Attacks Kirk, right? And so then when Pam enters the house, she finds a living room strewn with human bones, human and animal bones just everywhere.
Feathers.
You know that has to smell so bad. It's disgusting. It's so gross. Because it's just, but it's this animal, it's like bones and feathers and whatever. And there's a live chicken in one of the cages, which has got to be, you know, not pleasant for the chicken. But you know it smells bad.
Yeah.
And it's just horrific, right?
It's such a disgust. I mean, that's one of them that were more realistic. If you're walking into a disgusting place, you couldn't have
And she trips. She trips into the room and she's in the middle of all
this stuff. Yeah.
Oh, it just, this is why this movie bothers so many people. And they actually watch the movie. It's because of stuff like this. Because it's not, I mean, I know it's not real, but it's real.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. This isn't like, you know, prettied up or whatever.
Right. It's disgusting. It's like if you fell into a sewer.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's gross. You can feel you feel dirty.
Right.
You know, not like after Martyrs feel dirty, where you, no matter how much you scrub and wash, you can't take the yuck off of you. But like you feel gross when she's in the room. You're like, oh, right. God, it's just. Ugh.
Right. Yeah. And it's not because somebody is killing her.
No.
It's just the disgusting nature.
Yeah.
Geez, if I'm in there, what would I do?
I puke. You probably wind up throwing up, right? So, the man then grabs her as she goes to run out the door. Now, one of my favorite scenes, and it's not on purpose, when she goes out the front door, Gunner grabs her, and he grabs her hard. Her sandals fly off her feet. Like, she got them on, they fly right off her feet. Because he yanks her so hard, they had no choice. They just come off. And it's a realistic-looking thing, because Gunnar Hansen, big, strong guy, really grabbed her. Now, this is where everyone swears up and down on their mother that they see all the blood happening. So what happens? He grabs her, brings her in there, and then impales her on a meat hook where we see the meat hook. We see her coming. We change views. Now we see Leatherface appearing to put her down, but we can't because his back's in the way. And then she's on a harness. I mean, she's clearly harnessed up. No hook comes through the front of her. No blood's dripping down. No blood anywhere. Now she's screaming.
Right.
Like as if she's got a freaking meat hook going through her back into her you know, spinal, into like her rib cage and everything. She's screaming and selling it. She is selling you that she's in pain, but there's no blood. There's no blood whatsoever, which is what really, because people in their mind fills in all the blood. You're filling in this.
That's exactly what. Nothing implicit is ever shown. It's left to the imagination. The visual impact of what is supposedly actually happening is the hook.
Yeah.
And the chainsaw stuff. But your mind is racing to fill in the blanks.
Yep.
And filling in the blanks makes it that much more
horrific. Oh, yeah. So now she's on the hook. So Leatherface grabs a gas-powered chainsaw and begins to dismember Kirk's body as Pam watches. But if I took a chainsaw and cut into someone's arm, there would be blood.
It would splatter all over the place.
There's not.
No.
Being that they cut away too. They also cut to her screaming. They cut to the side of the wall, but there's no blood. There's not this river of blood you expect to come. A chainsaw is not a delicate, you're not slicing it with a scalpel. It's a chainsaw. Which is also a very use, out of all the weapons to use, chainsaw is not the best. You throw something to the web of a chainsaw, the chain comes off, it's useless. That's another story for another day. Billy Bob Thornton, not the actual actor. Oh. Billy Bob Briggs from the Last Drive-In. He always says, that's a terrible weapon. Something hits the chain comes right off, it's useless. Chainsaw is not a good weapon. Especially when you're like Hollywood chainsaw hookers, they found that out too. They returned those chainsaws as well. They definitely returned. They shot one thing and took them back. Anyway, where are we here? In the evening, Jerry searches for Pam and Kirk, and when he enters the other house, he finds Pam's nearly dead, spasming body in the freezer chest. The man then kills him with a hammer. Still no blood.
Yes. Now he says he hits him on the head, right? But then he goes back to find him, and he can't find him. And then Leatherface goes and sits down and almost is like starting to cry because he lost the body.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the body?
That's the guy they find out. They get him back. Yeah. So he hits him, and then he's wearing, he's sitting in there. He's saying, he's not there, and he's crawling away. That's the guy they go and kill and then beat him and then bring him back in. They do.
Okay.
Yeah. They kill him. He's dead. So... all right. At night, Sally and Franklin start towards the other house. The masked man ambushes them, killing Franklin with a chainsaw. Now, remember I said to you that there's real blood? This is when the real blood happens. That was all filmed. Now, notice how it's being filmed. They got a light on a camera, and that's the only light in that whole scene, right? When Marilyn Burns is running, she cuts herself so bad on the thorn bushes.
Yeah.
So when they get to the house and she's got blood and she's ripped up, that's real. She cut herself really bad on those thorns. And that's the blood in the movie. The masked man, so Leatherface ambushes him and kills Franklin with the chainsaw, which no one was upset about that. He just chainsaws the heck out of the chair. Now, he's in a wheelchair and you're sticking a chainsaw directly into him. There should be blood everywhere. So where are we here? Okay, so the masked man, so Leatherface chases Sally back to the gas station and vanishes. The station's proprietor comforts Sally for a moment, and after which he then beats her and subdues her, loading her into the pickup truck. So he attacks her. So you knew he wasn't a good guy.
Right, at that point.
But now you have no doubt. But
now, this is to me, this was the most effective scene in the movie. When he puts her in the truck and he's starting to drive away, the lighting effect from the windshield towards his face, it's almost like his face morphs into something horrible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's still the same guy. When he gets out of the truck, he looks the same.
Yeah.
But that was, that 20 seconds was really good.
So the proprietor drives to the other house and the hitchhiker then appears, which when they, he's screaming at them about his actions in the cemetery and identifying the hitchhiker as a grave robber. And he's like, no one knows it's me, and kind of thing. So they enter the house, and and Leatherface reappears dressed in women's clothing, which is what people never understood about this. But that's why he cuts off the faces of the women. He's trying to... So there is some school of thought that believes that Leatherface is supposed to be transgender. And it's not. It's just he's insane. Same. And he's trying to dress like the mother. Because
the mother is gone.
He's dead. So he's trying to replace her. the same way that we had, oh, I don't know, Norman Bates dressing like his mother to kill people. Like, it's all part of that same idea. Right. It is all based on Ed Gein. So some of those thoughts were taken from that, which is what it's also right. What Psycho is based on.
Right. And at this point, you know, if you thought that it was a little disgusting.
Nick is gross now. Yeah. Now it is getting disgusting.
Now the nightmare truly begins.
So the prior identifies the masked man and the hitchhiker as his brothers, and the hitchhiker refers to the masked man as Leatherface, which we know. The two brothers bring the old man, who's known as Grandpa, down the stairs and cut Sally's fingers so Grandpa can suck on her blood. Because nothing up to this point has been that gross. That's disgusting.
I mean, the grandpa, it's almost like he's a cadaver.
Yes.
With a little bit of life.
Yes. Left. That's the whole point. He's so beyond, like, he's so old that, but he needs the blood to come back, right? But the blood, and he's sucking on it. You're like, is he a vampire? It is not.
Can actually hear him going.
Yeah. So, sucking. Shockingly, Sally faints at this point. The next morning, Sally regains consciousness. The men taunt her and bicker with each other, resolving to kill her with a hammer. Oh, okay. So the other part where there's blood in this movie, the hammer's real. When they drop the hammer, it cracks her right in the side of the head. It cuts her head for reals. Because Kelly watched the end of the movie. She goes, what the hell are you watching? Well, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. She goes, okay. I go, watch this scene right here. I felt like DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's it. That's it right here. This is me. You know, kind of thing. When the hammer falls and it clicks on the side of her head, you can see Marilyn Burns, like, it hurt. It was a real hammer hitting her for real. Where are we? Whoops. So they kill with a hammer. They try to include Grandpa in the activity, and Grandpa's grip is too weak, and he drops the hammer repeatedly. Sally breaks. That's when they start bickering again. Sally breaks free and runs onto the road in front of the house, pursued by the brothers. An oncoming truck accidentally runs over the hitchhiker and kills him. In a scene that is very effective, because whatever got run over is a dummy, but it got run over for real by a real truck.
Not just knocked down.
No.
The wheels.
Rup-a-donk-a-donk-a-donk is just over and over and over. Yeah. It is something else. The truck driver attacks Leatherface with a large wrench, injuring him, and then escapes on foot. And what happens, he drops the chainsaw on his leg, which is the very famous, you know, Leatherface getting the chainsaw on the leg. The pickup truck stops. And as the pickup drives away, Sally jumps in the back and she's laughing. And then we have the very famous Leatherface dance at the end, which was all improvised at the last minute by Gunnar Hansen, because why not? This movie's nuts the whole way through. So we are describing a film to you that many people will swear up and down they've seen, but they haven't. And they will swear up and down that there's blood and gore and body parts everywhere and whatever. And there's not. Now, is there real blood? Yes. Is there really disgusting, horrible things happening? Yes. Do any of the people in this movie, do a lot of them have redeeming values? No. These are very much in line with the Firefly family and the whatever. Like, the Hewitts are very much in line with that. We don't know they're the Hewitts. I know they're the Hewitts. That's what their name is. They're very much in line with stuff that Rob Zombie would be, you know, find to be in his movies. He would try to always kind of bring these kind of characters in. Why? Because this is... It's not stuff you see nowadays. It's not mainstream kind of stuff. This is not the kind of thing. But I'm not saying people lived like they were cannibals, but people lived like this. I mean, people were very poor, didn't have electricity, didn't have gas, lived off the land, especially when the slaughterhouses closed down, jobs dried up. You know, it was hard. I mean, especially in the time in the 70s, I mean, people were disconnected from each other. If you lived in Texas, there's a possibility you didn't have neighbors you could even see, depending on where you lived. And in other parts of the country too. What I'm saying is, but it was one of those things that, like, it's 50 years old, this movie, but it seems like it's so much older than 50 years old because it seems so alien to today.
Yeah.
You know, as connected as the world is today, this seems so alien that they're so disconnected. There's no phone to call. He goes, we don't have a phone here. Don't have a phone here. Yeah. Like, you know what? But think about it. When they're driving, there's no power lines. There's no phone lines. Well, how could you have a phone? There's no phone lines, you know, kind of thing. So,
yeah, when we opened it up, I said this film was the one that started pretty much started the genre. And, you know, and when you think about the films that followed, surprisingly, in this movie, besides the fact that there's no blood, there's no sex or nudity, which became de rigueur in just about all the ones that followed. There had to be a scene. We said this many times. There had to be a scene, even if it was just a throw-in, to show frontal nudity of a woman or, you know, some guy's rear end, you know, on a bed. This movie doesn't have that. But what it does have, it has the greatest scream queen of all time.
Well, yeah.
I mean, in this movie, it's obvious that
Marilyn Burns earned whatever they paid her.
So. Scene after scene, it's obvious she's not screaming constantly.
Yeah.
But whenever she's asked to scream, she screams.
Yeah. Well, they also shot all night long. She's exhausted. It's real. It's the problem is some of the torture. I don't mean that. I mean, but like the of shooting on these hot, disgusting sets. It smells bad. The pig on the table is rotted.
Yeah.
Everything is rotted. Everything's rancid. It smells. You got your own blood on you. You're covered in sweat and whatever because it was hot, right? Why is it like this? Well, that's what makes this movie real, which is why people look at this and they turn away. He's like, oh, it's so gross. It's so disgusting. It is. It's gross and disgusting. Not gross and disgusting the way Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is. Not gross and disgusting the way Maniac is. Not gross and disgusting the way other movies that were, you know, you had effects to do that for you. This is gross and disgusting in that it's like it's designed to be. And it's probably more real than a lot of movies that people are kind of willing to sit down and watch. And this is never on TV. This is never on TV. I mean, I have it on we watched it through Shudder, but I'm saying like, and I have it on Blu-ray and whatever. But like this is not a movie that's on, like this isn't shown at Halloween time on AMC.
No.
This isn't shown on TCM. This isn't shown on whatever, right? This is because it's so visceral and guttural and just disgusting. But at the same time, I can appreciate how Toby Hooper used natural light. I can appreciate how he did. For no money, he made it look like it was a much bigger movie than it was. And with that being said, the use of the fact that the night shooting, when there's no light, imagine watching this back in the day when it was dirty, wasn't cleaned up like it is nowadays.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't see anything. It reminds me of how when Wes Craven shot The Hills Have Eyes, how it's very dark and very whatever. They use the darkness. The darkness is a character. Night is a character in this movie, you know, kind of thing to be used there. It allows you to the evil to occur that's occurring, and it keeps the hero, or in this case, you know, our heroine here, from being able to truly escape from it. You know, kind of thing. Because she doesn't have the van. They don't have gas in the van. She doesn't have a weapon. She doesn't have a knife. She doesn't have anything, you know? So, but the one thing it did lead to probably one of the craziest sequels ever, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, where they're, that's just nuts with Dennis Hopper. If you don't think you get any crazier, add Dennis Hopper to the mix. And then you're like, let's amp this up and have a chainsaw fight and like crazy stuff. And they're like, Leatherface ripping car doors off with a chainsaw at like 50 miles an hour. It's just nuts. That movie is crazy, but that's the whole point. They're like, how can they make a sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre? And they had to go nuts. They had to go full 80s nuts on it, right? And this series of movies, even the remake and the new one that came out a couple years ago and stuff like that, the constant to all of it's Leatherface. He is the constant to all these movies and the idea of the Hewitt family, right? Even the remake, you know, whether, you know, because then they turned in Arlie Emery as the police officer, remember, kind of thing, like whatever. There's always that tie-in of Leatherface, and he is the iconic thing from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And whether it's him in the suit, him in the dress, it's the face of a skinned woman or victim. How can it be a woman necessarily, but it's usually always a woman on his face. Lipstick put all around, just this hulkingly huge man with a chainsaw. You don't have to ever see this movie to be terrified of that. Yep. I mean, because they use it all the time.
Yeah.
So,
you know, there are times, watch the 6 o'clock news and disgusting stuff happens.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to graphically show you what's going on, but just the narration of what had happened, you know, turns your stomach.
Yeah. And there was a time when, you know, remember, we are very connected now compared to what things were then. You're talking the 70s. I mean, people were so disconnected at some points, you know, you could have a serial killer getting away with killing people. Nowadays, it would be very, I mean, not necessarily it can't happen, but it's much harder to do this, like the way the, like, you know, people are serial killers, whatever, because everyone's so up in your business about everything. People don't leave you alone. People don't whatever. They think that someone living next door is killing, you know, all these people. You know, the Ted Bundys of the world, the, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, the, you know, Ed Gein, like that stuff. Even the Manson killings, things like that, which is so people don't understand. Younger generations just don't understand it. They don't understand, like, how could that happen? And I'm like, different world back then. And it seems like a cop out to say that.
Well, we do,
but it's true.
Yeah, well, we've got one right here in New York. They call the Gilgo Beach murders.
Yeah,
and then a guy just who as a regular guy, he's got a regular job in New York City, has a nice house in the suburbs, and he winds up killing. What they figure is at least four, maybe more, but over a 13-year period.
Yeah,
and only because of just a happenstance. Of a dog who was being, they were walking, did they come across a bone?
Right.
And then from that bone, with today's
technology,
they were able to uncover.
Right. I'm saying back in the day, you didn't have that. You couldn't do that. You know, there was no DNA. There was none of that. Like, let's run it through a computer. Like, what? The computers were like giant rooms of things. They use it to launch rockets and stuff, you know? But and for those of you who have never seen the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it is, if you think you're going in going to catch Friday the 13th or whatever, you're not. It's not that kind of movie. It's a movie you go in and just plan to not feel clean when it's over. Plan on being like, this is not pleasant. It's not fun. I've seen this movie maybe a half dozen times. It's not a movie I pop on. It's not a movie, like I said, it's never on TV. I never catch it. And I'm somebody who's, I've probably seen every single Friday the 13th movie, even the ones I don't like, at least a dozen times, if not 20, 30 times. Because those movies are, I don't want to say they're fun, but they're they're campy.
Right.
They're lighter. They're whatever. I mean, people are getting slaughtered, but it doesn't matter because, hey, whatever, you know.
That's what I mean. You're almost immune to it by now. But I'm in the same boat as you. I hadn't seen this movie in probably 30 years because I wouldn't put it on.
No.
And it's not on TV, so I'm not going to, I've got it on DVD.
Yeah.
Because obviously you bought the DVDs back when they came out. But I agree with you. It's not a movie that you're gonna have as a horror night party.
Right. Right. And you know what the funny part is? And I got two things. One of the shirts I had bought from Fright Rags years ago is a beautiful painting done. It's leather face, but it's like kind of look like it's painted and whatever. But it's him running. It's the cover of it's him running with the chainsaw, and it's done with oranges and yellows and whatever. And it's awesome. And you wear it to not just horror conventions, but you just wear it. People are like, oh, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
They recognize it, yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Never seen it. They recognize it, right? It's one of those things that is Leatherface in the visions of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They may not know he's Leatherface. They know it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But people know Freddy. They may not know Nightmare on Elm Street. They know Freddy. You know Jason. You may not know Friday the 13th, right? They know, like, most people recognize Pinhead being Hellraiser, right, kind of thing. Even if they don't know, they know it, what it is. That's one of the things about this movie, and Leatherface himself has become a horror icon. And even though it's not Gunnar Hansen all the time, it's somebody different, and his look changes and whatever, but that giant hulking guy that's bigger than Jason Voorhees, that's bigger than anything else. He's this big, burly guy that clearly has some kind of mental deficiency and is got a chainsaw and is willing to kill you. So the other thing, and this is funny, and I know I had to tell this story, because I always tell this story whenever Texas Chainsaw Massacre comes up. So years and years and years ago, because now I'm in my 40s, Teresa's in her 40s, Anthony's a grown adult who's married and everything. Anthony was playing, so I have my friend Teresa, who's had a bunch of brothers, who I, you know, we spent many, many holidays with and Christmas and stuff like that, like my brother and I especially with that. He's playing a soccer game at the local field over here for whatever team he was playing for, right? Putt Valley, whatever. They're going to come back for dinner. And Anthony goes, oh, you guys have all these movies. Can we watch a movie? I said, of course, watch a movie, right? And again, when you have five or six siblings at a table, you're always fighting for attention, right? Kind of thing. We were there, we would play G.I. Joe and Army and all this stuff, right? But now he has my undivided attention, again, because Kelly's here with me, where I'm married at the time. And Teresa's like, and he gets all his attention. There's none of his brothers here taken away from him, right? He goes, I want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I'm like, I don't know, buddy. I don't know if you want to watch. I want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, all right. We sat down and watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think Anthony, who loves his horror movies, was thinking he was going to get more Friday the 13th and stuff like that. But he got Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I told him, I said, understand, this is not going to be like the other horror movie. Because we used to watch, I used to go over and I would bring horror movies and we'd watch horror movies. Because they have a, they didn't have cable and stuff, but that we would watch on like the VCR, right? We kind of thing. And plenty of nights I would go, Luke and I would go bring like, you know, popcorn and junk food, whatever. And the boys, we would all be downstairs and Teresa, oh, I can't believe we're doing this. And she would walk away and all the Whitaker boys and Luke and I would hang out and watch God knows what horror, you know, that I'm the ones who first showed them UFC. I'm the first one. Like they didn't know any of that stuff. They go, oh, this is cool. But Anthony came over. He wanted to watch this. I, to this day, he had to be what? Nine? Maybe he was nine. And it's funny because I ran into his brother who works for the post office. I ran into him and he goes, oh, man. He goes, how are your parents doing? And he's like, yeah, we still talk about the time Anthony came home. He goes, I ate. And he, to sit down to dinner, he ate, well, we were having pork chops or something like that. He ate like four pork chops. And he weighed like 6 pounds. He was as little as skinny. He ate so much dinner. Kelly's like, how do you eat so much? I'm like, it's Anthony. He can eat, put it away. He ate a ton of things. We watched the movie. He goes, they still talk about it. It is one of his favorite memories of all time. He doesn't even know what happened in the soccer game. He didn't remember he was playing soccer. He just know he came here and he had time with, you know, just like undivided attention, got to hang out. We had a big dinner. We had dessert. We had dessert too, which was a big thing because he didn't always get dessert. And then had dessert, watched a horror movie. It was the coolest thing ever. And that to me, I love that memory. That to me is the memory of this movie much more than this movie is. I mean, I know the movie and I know what's going to happen. But that to me is what I always hold on to for this because it's a really cool memory. By way of like, you know, being attracted to people that are part of my life. But at the same time, I don't watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I don't sit down and watch this movie over and over again. And since I'm not watching this movie over and over again, it's not Predator. It's not Aliens. Yeah. It's not Gladiator. Like, I mean, there's not lines to know from it. There's nothing memorable. Like, there's no cool one-liner, right? The problem is that since that's not the case, the other memories I have associated with are things like that. You know, kind of thing. It's a thing like going to a show. It's meeting Gunnar Hansen. It's meeting Marilyn Burns. Like, it's meeting them. And who are very, very nice people. But, like, you know, you're like, and everyone's like, you're Leatherface. He's like, yeah, okay. What do you want me to sign? He's just a really nice guy. He's just like, okay, oh, cool. Oh, let's take a picture. Like, he's really cool. But it's like, you know, that guy, like, terrified lots of people. Yeah. So I remember you had said to me that you saw this. I don't remember who with. You had gone to a midnight showing. Of this,
Arnie.
You went with Arnie to see the midnight showing.
It was Texas Chainsaw Massacre and what was the other one? The zombie one.
Night of Living Dead.
Night of Living Dead.
Yeah, I remember you had said that because I had never seen either of them when you told me that, and then I had to track down Night of Living Dead, which I saw obviously, and then Texas Chainsaw Massacre when I first got to see it, and I was like, oh, okay, because that was real horror. Like that's what real horror is. Like it's like, oh yeah, you know, you had to go see these at midnight. You had to go see, like, you couldn't be around regular people. You had to be people who were willing to stay up till all hours. Midnight was unheard of as a child. Like, no way you stay up that late, right? So, but, yeah, folks. So, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if you haven't seen it, it's on and off Shudder every now and then. It's worth it. If you've never seen it, it's worth the watch. Please don't think you're going to get a bumblegum, you know, kind of like feel good, like slasher movie. It's not going to be that. It's definitely guttural and raw. But I think everyone should see it. It's much like in the vein, like Maniac. Like, I'm not popping Maniac. I mean, I've seen Maniac more than I've seen Texas Chainsaw, but I'm not popping Maniac on.
It's a touchstone. I mean, the movie, it's one of those that historically it was important. It's important. Oh, it's
important. Yeah.
So as a historical document, it's important. It didn't make the 100 the greatest movies.
No, it's not going to, but it makes the top horror movies of all time.
Yep.
And that's the thing is, and if we talk about influential horror movies, I mean, you're talking about Night of the Living Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like those things, Halloween, right? Eventually Scream, about the postmodern, like, I mean, you start looking at who are those directors? I mean, we're talking the George Romero's, the, you know, John Carpenter's, the Toby Hooper's, the Wes Craven's. There's a reason those names are horror royalty.
Yeah. I mean, in this genre, seriously think about what the last important horror movie that even whether it became a franchise or was a one-off or whatever. And to be perfectly honest, there are good ones like Insidious or The Conjuring. They're good movies, but they're made for money.
Yeah.
You know, and they the first ones are usually always the best. And as they get further along, they get less and less and less and less. Here, this is a one-off.
That there's any sequel to this was shocked this, everyone.
Right.
Yeah. This literally could have been its own movie, encapsulated nothing else.
Right.
Yeah. But the problem was money talks in the 80s. Right. The name Texas Chainsaw Massacre was worth more than whatever happened in the film.
I mean, this movie does not have an ending that says there's going to be a sequel.
Yeah. You just hope she gets away.
Yeah.
You're just like, man, I hope they don't stop for gas. You know, kind of thing. Just keep driving, buddy.
Yeah.
So,
Whereas all the other ones have the open endings.
Yeah. I mean, she gets away, but and again, they don't bring her back. Oh, sorry. Spoiler. Until last year when she's back in there as the same character who's been waiting, training, Laurie Strouding it up, waiting for to find out so I can get my revenge on Leatherface. And you're like, wow, 50 years ago, you know, man, he's old. Anyway, so. To say that the critical release, the critical praise for this movie didn't exist is probably the truth. Every critic hated it across the board. Fans ate it up. People went to the movie and saw it. It was word of mouth on this was something people were like, you got to see this.
You have never seen anything like this.
Which is funny because there's nothing here. People misremember it so badly.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing that they're like, oh, it's blood and gore and this. Now I'm like, there's not, but it is effective. And I think that speaks also volumes to it too. Had it not been as well made, it's a well-made movie. If it had not been as well made, I don't know if it ever hits as far. This is why, you know, you see movies. And again, we talk about like Halloween is Luke and I talk about Halloween. Halloween is so much more than the sum of its parts. Like Halloween, the movie, what it is so much bigger than the running time of that, you know, the 80, whatever minutes. Like what it meant, what it did, what it spawned, what happened, Carpenter, the music, the this, the that, is so many more than its parts. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as a movie by itself, a standalone, okay, there's nothing earth-shattering, there's not a story, there's not whatever that's like, oh my God, I've never seen this before. It's not pleasant, but what it does is it takes those little things that are important that people now are able to take into other parts of the genre and grow this genre out. But you got this where it comes from. And there's always a seed that starts something. Right. And this is the seed. So just like Night of the Living Dead was the seed for that too. All right, folks. So that about wraps it up for Texas Chainsaw Massacre as we start May. We're going to end May with a movie that I am willing to bet most of you walked by at a Blockbuster shelf at one point in your life and maybe never picked it up. Movie's called The Collector. I love The Collector. 2009, 15 years. How is this movie 15 years old? This movie feels like it came out 2 years ago. It doesn't look like it, though, because the cars are wrong and things like that. But 2009's The Collector. If you haven't seen it, please watch it because we're going to ruin the heck out of what happens in that movie because you need to know what's going to happen in that. We're going to talk about that at the end of May. Of course, we have all kinds of stuff coming up. We have things this summer. Remember, this summer, again, even though it's not an anniversary year, we are going back to Camp Crystal Lake. Dad is going to have to watch Friday the 13th, part 5. You heard me. He's going to have to watch it. I'm going to make him. And what do I say to that? Damn enchiladas! Anyway, so like we say here, folks, keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the sky.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!